All right. Well, as I said, here we are in chapter 18. We're continuing on. We're following the children of Israel as they have been redeemed out of Egypt. And at this point, they're probably about 2 months. This is about 2 months after they've been redeemed from Israel, from Egypt. And so we're, like I said, this is going to talk a lot about leadership, and a lot of what is described here is very helpful, and I think it also it forms the foundation for the leadership principles that are set forth in the New Testament, and that churches really operate under today. And I actually think that there's a lot of really good leadership principles that would be applicable to us, even if we're not in church leadership, you know, just in our leadership that we have in our jobs and in other areas of our lives. So let's just take a look and see what chapter 18 has to say. So chapter 18 of Exodus verse 1 reads, "And Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, that the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt." And so if you remember, Moses, you know, he had a father-in-law, his name is Jethro, and he was a priest of Midian. And if you recall, Moses spent a lot of time there with his father-in-law and his wife in Midian. Approximately 40 years he was there, and he was there tending the flocks of his father-in-law Jethro, and so all of this time that Moses was in Egypt, when he had left his father-in-law, went to Egypt to do what the Lord told them to do, which is to be the one that would be delivering the people out of Egypt. You know, he'd be the one who would be confronting the Pharaoh and so forth. And so that whole period of time, probably about a year, you know, Jethro was, you know, stayed there in Midian, and we're gonna see that Moses' wife, Zipporah, and his two sons also stayed in Midian when Moses was doing, you know, all of those things there before Pharaoh. But all of the plagues that occurred in Egypt, and the parting of the Red Sea, and how all of those Egyptian soldiers were killed and everything, that news, the news of all of those things, it spread in all directions. And so at this point, you know, Jethro had heard about what had taken place and what the Lord had done for Moses and for Israel, and how he had brought the people out. And so he's now coming to Moses to talk to him and to really get the full story from him. Now, Jethro, it says he's a priest of Midian, and many believe that he was a believer, and that he actually is a descendant of Abraham. So if you recall, after Sarah died, Abraham took another wife. Her name was Keturah, and that's talked about in Genesis chapter 25. And one of the children of Abraham and Keturah was Midian. And so many believe that this Jethro was a descendant of Midian. And so it's kind of neat, you know, that as we're, you know, going through the Bible sequentially here, that, you know, there are a lot of things that we know about because, you know, we've studied them already. And so so we see here that Jethro comes and he wants to visit with Moses here. So verse 2 says, "Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back with her two sons, of whom the name of one was Gershom, for he said, I have been a stranger in a foreign land. And the name of the other was Eliezer, for he said, the God of my father was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness where he was encamped at the mountain of God. And so we see here, as the story is unfolding here, that Jethro not only came to Moses here in the wilderness to meet with Moses, but he also brought his daughter, which was Moses' wife, and Moses' two sons, Gershom and Eliezer. And we see that the names of his two sons were named based upon various events that, you know, were taking place in Moses' life. And so we see that this first son, Gershom, it says he was, that his name means like stranger in or in a foreign land. And so what was, he was at that point in time when that son was born, the firstborn, he was kind of in a down and out, so to speak, because he kind of felt like, you know, if you recall, you know, Moses was, he had left Egypt. He was fleeing because he had killed that Egyptian, and people learned about it, and he thought that he was going to get killed because the Pharaoh at that time had said that he was going to kill Moses. And so he had to escape and to leave. And so he was, in effect, a stranger in a foreign land. But then there's this next son here, Eliezer. And this is actually the first mention of this son. His son was not mentioned earlier in the story here. But this son was, he named him Eliezer, which means the God of my father was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. So at this point in time, there was some kind of, at least he had kind of a positive frame of mind, or there's a rekindling of faith in Moses' heart compared to the despair he had when his first child was born. And if you recall, you know, during that time when he was in Midian, the Lord was doing a work in his heart. You know, the Lord was really humbling him, and he really just emptied him during that period of time. Now, the fact, the one thing is just in terms of the chronology and what's going on here is that if you remember when Moses was leaving to go to Egypt to do what the Lord told him to do, there was that point in time where he got really sick and he thought he was going to die. And it turned out that it was because he failed to circumcise his son. And there was, when we covered this, we talked about the fact that his wife then went and circumcised the son and threw the foreskin, you know, at Moses. And basically the point was, is that there must have been something going on between the two of them where she was, you know, not comfortable doing this, you know, having the son be circumcised at the time that he was supposed to be or whatever. And so there was something going on where, you know, she was kind of standing in the way of him, you know, fully obeying the Lord. And so it's likely that, you know, he sent her and the children back to stay with the father-in-law. And so now here the father-in-law is bringing the wife and the two kids here to Moses. And again, this is about a year later. So they've been apart from each other for quite some time. Verse 5 says, and Jethro's father-in-law came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness where he was encamped at the mountain of God. Verse 6, now he had said to Moses, I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons with her. And then it says, so Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, bowed down and kissed him, and they asked each other about their well-being, and they went into the tent. And so here we see here that Moses truly did have a special a relationship with Jethro. There was a lot of love and respect there. At this time, we know that Moses is in his 80s. He's probably in his early 80s. And so, and he's the leader of the nation of Israel, this 2 to 3 million people. And yet, here he is showing a lot of humility. That's one thing that Moses had about him, is that he was a humble man, and he's showing respect for his father-in-law. And you know, he's bowing down to him, and he's kissing him before the people. But then it says here that they began to ask each other, you know, how they were doing and so forth, and they went into the tent to have a private conversation. And so verse 8 goes on to say, and Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and I mean all the hardship that had come upon them on the way, and how the Lord had delivered them. And so, as I said before, word had spread about what had taken place, and Jethro probably had bits and pieces about what the Lord had done and so forth. But here Moses is filling in all of the pieces, telling about all the plagues that were brought, all the different encounters and conversations that took place between between Pharaoh, Moses, and Aaron, and what had happened to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake. And it says here that he also talked about the hardships that that had come upon them as they along the way, you know, when they left, and how the Egyptians, you know, chased after them, and you know, all the different things that took place in terms of not having water and food and so forth, and how the Lord had delivered them. And so really, you can see that, you know, Moses gave a very complete an accurate account of what happened, you know, not just the good parts, not just the bad parts, but he told the whole story here. And we're going to see here that this had a reaction in Jethro. Verse 9 says, then Jethro rejoiced for all the good which the Lord had done for Israel, whom he had delivered out of the hand of the Egyptians. And so we see the reaction of Jethro is in rejoicing. And you know, read that, you know, that verse, and it just becomes apparent that, you know, when we testify, right, and tell of what the Lord has done, his greatness, and so forth, that it causes people to rejoice, it causes people to praise the Lord. We should always want to tell our testimony, want to tell about the things that have taken place. You know, a lot of times, you know, we want to, you know, kind of keep that under wraps, or keep it under a bushel, so to speak. Maybe there are some parts of it that aren't flattering or whatever, but, you know, the Lord gives us, he takes us through things, and he gives us a testimony for a reason. And so we're to share it with others. It blesses others, and it brings glory to God. And so it continues, though. Look, verse 10, it says, and Jethro said, blessed be the Lord who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of Pharaoh, and who has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods, for in the very thing in which they behave proudly, he was above them. And so here we see that, you know, as I said before, Jethro was likely a believer. And so it's not like, you know, this is him, you know, coming to the Lord, but this is really something that is very encouraging, and it's bringing out a tremendous amount of faith in him. And he's saying that after hearing what the Lord has done, now I know for sure. It's just increased my faith to know that, he's known that he's had faith in God and he knows of his greatness, but now he knows for sure that he's greater than all of these false gods, all these false gods that the Egyptians and people from all over the known world at this time were worshiping. Because I know that now for a fact. And he says, in the very thing in which they behave proudly. And so what he's really talking about is what we have been talking about all along, is that they not only had like one false god, but they had like a multitude of these false gods. And each of these false gods had the thing that, their strength, so to speak, that they were, the god of livestock, or the god of the sun, the god of wisdom, whatever the case may be. And in every thing in which they boasted about, in terms of their gods, the Lord embarrassed them. The Lord put them to shame, because the very thing that they were supposed to be so strong in, these gods, the Lord was able to easily show his power over them through those various plagues that he did, and even to show the great power over that great and mighty nation called Israel, Egypt, that when the Lord drowned them in the Red Sea. And so he just is just praising the Lord, and he goes on in verse 12. It says, "Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and other sacrifices to offer to God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses, his father-in-law, before God." And so we see here that it's such a powerful thing that's going on in him, that he now offers a burnt offering and other sacrifices. Now, a burnt offering is a significant thing, because a burnt offering is an offering of consecration, meaning that you put an animal there on the altar and you burn it completely. And what it means, what it's symbolizing, is to say that my life is completely yours. I belong to you, Lord, in my entirety. I'm not leaving anything back. There's no part of me that belongs or has any allegiances or has any passion for anything else. And so this hearing what the Lord did really stirred him up, and that is what it was meant to do. All along, as we were going through those chapters, we saw the Lord say multiple times that he was doing this so that not only the Egyptians, but that everyone would know that he is the Lord. He himself, and only he, is the Lord. And so this is having its desired effect. It's having the effect that it's supposed to have, where he is now, in many ways, almost like rededicating his life to the Lord. And then it says here that Aaron came along with the elders, and they ate bread, and so they had a feast, and it was just a beautiful time that they, a fellowship that they had together. Verse 13, "And so it was on the next day that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood before Moses from morning until evening." And so this is kind of an interesting little transition here, because it's like, here we have this special day where we have this special guest who's come, and we were able to have this discussion and fellowship and food and everything. And then Moses kind of goes back to his everyday life here. And that involved him sitting and judging the people. And so here are these 2 to 3 million people. And with a group that large, you're bound to have disputes, and you're bound to have questions that need to be interpreted. And so here he's serving as a counselor and as a judge to the people. but it is he alone who is providing this counsel and this judgment. And you can see from this that he is a very, very hard worker here, right? Because he is willing to take this on by himself. And so it goes on, to be unfolded here. Verse 14, it says, "So when Moses, his father-in-law, saw all that he did for the people, he said, 'What is this thing that you're doing for the people? Why do you alone sit and all the people stand before you from morning until evening?'" And so here his father-in-law, when he sees this, right away he sees that there's something wrong with it. And it's kind of an interesting thing, but you know, it's one of those things where sometimes you can be, when you're involved in something, you know, you're so close to it, you can't see how wrong it is or how ridiculous it is. But the reality is here he is, it's saying here, you know, he goes, first of all, he's asking this question, "What is this thing that you're doing for the people?" Now, the interesting thing is that, you know, in the New King James, it says for the people, but in the Old King James, it says to the people. What is this thing you're doing to the people? And in a way, it kind of is that way, because here there are two things that are bad about this. One is that he alone is sitting here as a counselor and a judge for these millions of people, and they're bringing all of these controversies. And then the second thing is that the people are standing out there waiting for him to judge. So can you imagine how long the lines would be? I mean, it'd be worse than, the lines, to get on the best ride at an amusement park or something. You know, it's just wrapped around, the corner, so to speak. And they're just standing there waiting for him to judge. And then, he'll get to a certain number of people. And then the next day, the people who didn't get to see him, they got to go and stand in line again. So it's just a big, kind of a ridiculous kind of situation here. He's saying, like, what are you doing? Like, this doesn't make any sense, right? Verse 15, it says, "And Moses said to his father-in-law, 'Because the people come to me to inquire of God, when they have a difficulty, they come to me, and I judge between one and another, and I make known the statutes of God and his laws.'" And so here what's going on is that he knows the statutes and the laws. The Lord has revealed those to him. And so these people bring these different things, and they don't know the answers to these questions, and they have these difficulties and these issues that they can't resolve on their own, he will come and he will make known, he'll teach them basically and say, here's how it works, this is what we're supposed to do, and he resolves the controversy. Now, what's happening here is that he is kind of falling into, a pattern that many people, many leaders, many like pastors, will fall into. What we're going to see is that his father-in-law gives him some very godly counsel here. Let's see what his father-in-law says. The first thing he says here is in verse 17. He says, "So Moses' father-in-law said to him, 'The thing that you do is not good.'" And so first off, we see that he speaks with a lot of clarity here, right? It's very simple and straightforward. He doesn't hold back anything, but he's basically saying, this is not good. It may seem like it is, like it may seem like it's good because you're working hard, you are well-meaning, you're wanting to do, to help the people out, right? And to provide them with an understanding and to resolve these things. Now, his father-in-law is not saying that this is not good because he was unfit to hear the disputes. In other words, like he didn't know the law, or he didn't have the competency to judge. And it wasn't because he didn't care about the people or what they were disputing about. It wasn't because of any of those things. The reason why it wasn't good is because the job was too big for Moses to do. It was an impossible thing that he was trying to do. And as a result, his time and energy was being used unwisely. And then justice was being delayed for many of the people of Israel. And so, as I said before, this is something that that men who are called by God they tend to fall into this. There's a danger of attempting to do more than you're able to do, you know, to just take on a lot of different things. And so we're going to see here that Moses' father-in-law is going to lay out a principle here of, it's basically kind of like a delegation model here that is going to serve Moses well, and it's going to serve the children of Israel well, but it's also going to be a principle that we're going to see, or that we did see as we went through Acts chapter 6, and so we'll look at that after we kind of see what Jethro is going to recommend here. Verse 18, Jethro goes on to explain the problem and why this is not sustainable. So verse 18, it says, "Both you and these people who are with you will surely wear yourselves out, for this thing is too much for you. You are not able to perform it by yourself." And so he's saying that this thing that you're doing is not good, because both of you, you know, it's not like just you are going to wear yourself out because, you know, you're taking on a task that's too big. The people are going to be worn out, you know, for waiting for you to give judgment. They're going to be worn out because, you know, their disputes are not going to be settled in a timely manner. You know, he's just saying this is not a good thing. You gotta stop this. And so then in verse 19 and forward from there, Jethro lays out his advice, his godly counsel to Moses. So let's see what he says. Verse 19 says, "Listen now to my voice. I will give you counsel, and God will be with you. Stand before God for the people, so that you may bring the difficulties to God, and you shall teach them the statutes and the laws, and show them the way in which they must walk, and the work they must do." So he starts out and he lays out what he needs to do. And the first two pieces of this are that he needs to pray and he needs to teach. And so we see in verse 19, it says, he says to Moses to stand before God for the people. And so what he's really saying is to pray, to intercede, to seek to head off some of the problems through prayer. And so the very first thing, and again, this is another mistake that we as Christians and we as Christian leaders make, is that when we have different kinds of difficulties, different kinds of problems and so forth, we immediately just launch out and just try to solve them. We feel like, oh, I got that figured out. I know what the rule is, or I've dealt with that before. I have the strength. I have the, the ability to articulate things well and to reason with people and stuff like that. But he gives, his father-in-law gives really good wisdom in saying, hey, look, you need to pray. And that is something that, you know, for a leader, it is critically important that a leader pray for the people, because in praying, you get the wisdom of God, okay? But also, the Lord can solve some of these problems where you don't even have to provide any counsel or any judgments or what have you. And so that's step one, is pray. And then step two is to teach the people the statutes and the laws. And so we see that then as a leader, Moses's job is to go ahead and teach them these statutes and laws. So instead of him just being the only one who knows these rules and everything, and he's giving the judgments and the counseling, he is to teach the people the statutes. And this is critically important, right? Because number one, in teaching the people the statutes, the people themselves would know the law for themselves. And so number one, they would avoid engaging in conduct that would lead to disputes. Okay, so that's number one. The second one is that they would be able to settle some of the disputes themselves, because they would know what the rules are, and they would say, hey, what you did is wrong, because, you know, here's the rule on that, or here's the principle that we should be following. And the other person may say, yeah, you're right, I'm sorry about that. Let's come to an agreement on how we're going to resolve this. And then the other thing about the teaching is that by teaching, the people would be more comfortable, because there's going to be a delegation model that's going to be laid out, that they would be comfortable with these rulings coming from other people other than Moses, okay? If the counseling and the rulings are consistent with God's word. But you can see here that these are really important principles, and these are principles that we seek to follow in our church, right? In teaching through the Bible, right? So that people, that everyone, we all know the word, you know, we all know what is right and what is wrong, and that's the way the Lord wants it to be. And so the principles that sort of come out of this is that, number one, you know, God himself is the recognized leader of the people, and it is his statutes and laws that we are to follow. Number two, the leader cannot do all the work by himself. And number three, the leader has a special responsibility for praying for the people and praying for the resolution of disputes and so forth, and for peace and unity among the people, and also for teaching the word. And then lastly, the leader, and what we're gonna see as we look at these next verses, is responsible for selecting, training, and giving authority to others to help in the work. And so here in verse 21, it goes on to, his father-in-law goes on to tell him what he needs to do. Verse 21, it says, moreover, you shall select from all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens, and let them judge the people at all times. Then it will be that every great matter they shall bring to you, and every small matter they themselves shall judge. So it will be easier for you, for they will bear the burden for you. And so here we see a lot of things going on here, but the first of which is that there is a recommendation here that he delegate. And, you know, this is a really important thing. And actually, you know, I mean, we've dealt with this ourselves at our church. And, you know, Pastor Bob is really good about this. about delegating. You know, when Pastor Dave passed away and he stepped in as senior pastor, I mean, one of the things that he did was to try to identify able men to appoint as elders and as deacons to be involved in helping out. And that's really important. You know, instead of bearing the burden all by yourself, you're selecting others to help to carry the load. And so let's kind of dig into this and into like kind of these principles here. Now, the first is that it says that he is to select from among the people able men. And so, you know, again, what we're talking about here is delegation. And if you're going to delegate successfully, the first thing you want to do is make sure that you are delegating to someone who is able, okay, that has the ability to do what it is that you're charging them with. And so the first part is that they need to be able. That means that they have to have the intellect, they have to have the confidence, they have to have the strength, the courage, the maturity to carry out whatever job it is that they're there to do. And in this case, it's judging. And so they clearly have to be, they have to know the word, they gotta know, they have to have a certain confidence in carrying out these judgments. They have to have strength and courage, you know, so that they're not intimidated by the people that they're judging and so forth. The next thing is it says that they should be such as fear God. And so this is a very important thing, is that their fear of God has to be greater than anything. Their fear of God would have to be greater than the fear of man, number one, so that they're not swayed or intimidated by what a man that's standing before them might say. And if they have a fear of God, they're gonna obey God, they're gonna obey his commandments. And so this is a critical element, is that they have a fear of God. And then it says here, but they're men of truth. That means that they're honest and they're trustworthy. So these are qualities, again, that are important if you're going to be judging and counseling people. And then lastly, it says here that they have to be ones who hate covetousness. And that basically means that these are people who can't be bribed. They can't be manipulated. They can't be, you know, and you know, bribery is not only just, you know, in terms of someone giving you a bag of money, but it you can't be influenced by a feeling that someone would think more favorably of you. You'd have a better reputation, or that, you know, people could manipulate you through flattery or something like that. So these are solid men that we're talking about here, and so this is, you know, what he is to do, and he's to train these people. And, you know, one of the things, again, you know, I bring up a Pastor Bob because, I mean, this is just something for me and working with him, you know, side by side, that just really stands out is his desire to identify godly men to assist and to help to carry the load and developing leaders. I mean, this is something that's super important to Pastor Bob in terms of developing leaders and succession planning, which is something that's not easy to do, because it requires that you take the time to you spend time with men, you spend time, you know, teaching them, you spend time just getting to know them and so forth. And so this is what his father-in-law told him. And he goes on to say that these leaders should be placed over a certain number of people based upon their abilities, right? Some of the people could be rulers over thousands of people, some over hundreds, some over 50s, and some over 10s. And so you see that you're putting to work a lot of people. And, you know, there's a saying that it's better to put 100 men to work than to do the work of 100 men. Okay. And so that's what's going on here. This is, wise delegation here. And what is the deal here is there's sort of this escalation that would take place, right? And so you would have rulers of 10 people, and if a person had a dispute, they would first go to that person. And if they said, oh, I don't know, I don't know, then they could go to the person who is a ruler of 50, and you kind of work your way up. And if you get to the guy who's the ruler of thousands and he doesn't know, then it's that matter that would go to Moses. So it's almost like the court system that we have today, where you have the trial courts and you have the appellate court, and then you have the Supreme Court. And so that's what is being set up here. And verse 22 says, and let them judge the people at all times. So all the different judgments that are being brought, these individuals would be judging all the time. And it says, and then it will be that every great matter would then be brought to Moses. So he would only deal with the big ones. In some ways you can look at that and say, well, gosh, now that means that it looks like he's now just, he's not doing anything, just sitting back and kicking back. But the reality is that even though he's dealing with a smaller number of matters, there are greater matters, are more complex, are more difficult to solve. And so he's still going to be spending a lot of time dealing with and judging the matters that come to him. And so he goes on to say, if you do this, this is going to be easier for you because they're going to bear the burden with you. You know, the 100 will make it easier, for you to judge and to do what you have to do. So then in verse 23, he begins to lay out for him, what the benefits would be for doing this. Verse 23, it says, if you do this thing and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, and all the people will also go to their place in peace. And so here we see that the first thing that he says here is, he says, if you do this thing and God commands. And so here we see a recognition, and we see, we see a humility, and we see a man who truly is God-fearing, because even in his advice, the advice that the father-in-law is providing here, he recognizes that, he's coming from outside of Israel, and that what he's saying is really, it's more of kind of like, management principles that he's providing, as opposed to principles that come out of, existing, recognized laws or statutes of God. And therefore, he was careful, Jethro was careful to tell Moses that you need to be sure that this is something that God wants you to do. And so, don't just take my word for this. Take this to God and get confirmation from him. And so we can see here a principle in that. And that is that sometimes God will provide wisdom from other people. The Lord will send other people to tell you something. But the thing that we are to do, though, is we should still test that wisdom by going to God for confirmation and perhaps even, amendment. Maybe the Lord may say, yes, do this, but, do it in this way, kind of change it in some way. And so we know that all wisdom comes from God, we should desperately seek his counsel. And so he goes on and he says that if you do this, it says you will be able to endure. So in other words, the first reward of doing this is that you're going to avoid being exhausted. Okay, you're going to be able to, to function. And then the second thing is that all the people will also go to their place in peace. So the second reward is that they will be effectively served. And so what that means is that there would no longer be a delay in judgment. You know, there's a saying that justice delayed is justice denied. And so the longer the dispute lasts, you know, there are things that could happen, right? You can have more controversy. There could be more strife among the people, hot words are exchanged. More bystanders get involved in what's going on, you know, and so, you know, the idea is, you know, is to resolve these things quickly and not to let them fester. So, that's the wisdom that he provides. Now, I did mention in passing that there is something that took place in the New Testament that I believe came out of this. And I want to just read this real quickly. We should all be familiar with it because Pastor Bob covered this when we were in Acts chapter 6. But there was something that took place in Acts chapter 6 where they were doing distributions of food to widows. And there was a feeling that the widows that were Hellenistic, you know, they had like a Greek background, that they were not being treated as well as the ones that were like the true, like sort of Jewish widows in their eyes. And so there a big kind of controversy came, and this is in Acts chapter 6, verses 2 through 4. It says, "Then the 12 summoned the multitude of the disciples and said, 'It is not desirable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Therefore, brethren, seek out from among you 7 men of good reputation, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over his business. But we will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the word.'" And so you can see in just in those words there and what they did, that it's almost identical to what Moses is being advised to do. Select, you know, good men, holy men of good reputation, and let them serve. And so this is really kind of, you know, many people believe this is kind of the beginnings of deacons, you know, serving tables and so forth. And the elders here were giving themselves continually to prayer, just as Jethro advised Moses to do, and to the ministry of the word, so teaching. And so the same principle applies here. So back to chapter 18 of Exodus, and we'll wrap it up here. Verse 24, it says, "So Moses heeded the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he said." And so we can see here that Moses was very teachable. You know, he doesn't say, "Hey, look, thanks for your advice, but I'm the one who's in charge here, and so I'm going to do it my way." He's very teachable. It says here, he heeded the voice of his father-in-law, and he did all that he said. Verse 25, "And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of 50, and rulers of tens. So they judged the people at all times. The hard cases they brought to Moses, but they judged every small case themselves. Then Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went his way to his own land." And so he came and he helped to solve a problem. And when that problem was over, he left and went back to his own land. And so it was truly a blessing, that whole trip and all of the wisdom that he brought was truly a blessing to Moses and to the people of Israel. And so that's chapter 18. We will stop there. And again, next week, we'll pick up in chapters 19 and 20 as we will see the giving of the Ten Commandments. And so we will likely spend some time in that part of Exodus, really kind of going through each of the commandments and really understanding what they truly mean.